Hey everyone, and happy Wednesday. I'm back at the retreat house. I'll be here today and tomorrow with Cheryl. So far, we just started speaking, right? We've been kind of silent up until just a moment ago, so 5 minutes ago, I think. So it's good to be here with y'all. So we're here for the data chinks. I'm trying to get my brain working. Right? Shake it out of silence. Where am I? What am I doing? So we're here for the Tao Te Ching Enlightened Leadership, and I'm going to start with music. That's what I'm doing. Funny how you can come back if you really try. Okay, so I'm going to start with some music. The song I'm going to play is called I'm Just an Old Chunk of Coal. And this is a song that I used to play when I was around 19 or 20 years old. My unworthiness was very, very strong. And what I really wanted to do was become as good as the rest of y'all. And so I would play this song, I'm just an old chunk of coal, but I'm going to be a diamond someday. And it really, you know, I planned on really shining myself up and becoming successful and as good as you all. Recently, Doreen posted a story in the forum. And the story is about finding a bowl in the attic that's really covered with all kinds of yuck. And she shines that bowl and shines that bowl and shines that bowl. And it's just this gorgeous, gorgeous bowl. And she puts it up on her mantle and admires the bowl. That bowl represents the self that we, quote, perfect, you know, with our education, with our whatever we learn, with our skills that we adopt, with our taste in music that we think is refined, our taste in food and wine that we think is refined, our ability to grow plants, whatever we do to make ourselves like ourselves. That's what the bowl represents. And then in Doreen's story, she starts noticing, oh no, there's a crack in the bowl. And it really makes her feel terrible that there's a crack in this bowl that she admires. But then when she looks closely, she realizes it's not a crack. There's actually another cover on it that she didn't clean off. And so she really doesn't know what the bowl looks like at all. And that, of course, is a crack in the false self that has been perfected toward the best of our ability. And if you explore that crack, you end up throwing away the beauty of the false self that you perfected, but you discover the true self. So this song, ever since I read Doreen's story, has been in my mind. Again, this is about perfecting the false self. And of course, we all want to go further than that. But it's kind of a fun song, and it was a favorite of mine for years. So I'm going to play that song for us now.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal. Diamond someday. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face. I'm gonna kneel and pray every day, lest I should become vain along the way. Just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna learn the best way to walk. I'm gonna search and find a better way to talk. I'm gonna spit and polish my old rough edge self till I get of every single flaw. I'm gonna be the world's best friend. I'm gonna go around shaking everybody's hand. Hey, I'm gonna be the cotton picking rage of the age. I'm gonna be a diamond someday. Thank you. old chunk of coal. But I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face. I'm gonna kneel and pray every day, lest I should become vain along the way. Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
Can you guys hear me? If I don't stop sharing my screen, okay, good. Funny thing is, as I was listening to this song now, I told you it kind of been in my mind ever since I read Doreen's story, but only the chorus, not the verses. So I haven't listened to the verses in a long time. And it was interesting listening now with the point of view I have now, because when I listened when I was 19 or 20, I wanted to do everything this guy in the song said. You know, I wanted to shine away all of my imperfections and smile at everybody and shake your hand and make you all like me. And, you know, I wanted to do all that, right? Because I didn't want to be this unworthy scumbag anymore. And now I realize that would be so much pressure to try and make yourself perfect. Oh my God. So first of all, you're just covering up the unworthiness with a bunch of, you know, efforting. And then you're under so much pressure. And this is where stress comes from. Stress is really the fear that this mask you've built to cover up your unworthiness, which you still believe in, that there's going to be a crack in it. And that everybody's going to see, actually, you are still a scumbag. You know, that's where all stress comes from. So it was interesting listening to the song again. It's like, wow, all that pressure I put on myself. And I lived with all that pressure until my mid-40s when I started trying to, you know, to just let go of the I am bad thought. What I want to do now before I get started, I've switched my screen. I want to go over the lessons that we have learned so far from the Tao Te Ching as we look at it with enlightened leadership in mind. And I'll just go over these kind of quickly, but every now and then I want to review them. So lesson number one, we learned don't want anything, right? Don't want anything. That's a challenging one for many of us because wanting is something that we're addicted to. But the enlightened leader doesn't want anything. The enlightened leader kind of faces what's placed in front of her, but she doesn't want anything. Which leads us to lesson number two. Anything can happen through an empty leader. When we're not empty, when we are dealing with our ideas, we're limited to our ideas. We're limited to what we can imagine. And what we can imagine is basically based on our past. So we're really limited by our past. When you're empty, you're not limited at all. You can be guided to do things that you never, ever would have imagined or attempted to tackle. And again, all of the resources are provided. And so anything can happen through you when you're empty, when you're limited, when you're full of ideas. Lesson number three, practice not doing. And that really means remaining empty. It doesn't mean that the body won't be busy as heck, because the body might be busy as heck. But again, it's not coming from you. You're remaining empty. Your focus is on being present and empty. That's what it means to practice not doing. Emptiness purifies fullness. That's lesson number four. Fullness is every single idea that you believe in. And it's emptiness or awareness that purifies all of those ideas, not more fullness. So things like contemplation, meditation, journaling, mind watching with awareness, as Anne was describing in the previous program when she talked about being at the doctor's and watching all of those thoughts that were arising around illness. you know, that she was watching with emptiness. And it's that emptiness that actually purifies. Lesson number five, it's not about me. It's just not about me. You know, that's what most people make the mistake of thinking it is about me. I want people to see how successful I am. I want people to see what a good leader I am. I want people to know what a good cook I am. I want people to notice how much I give. You know, it's all about me. And actually, all of that is, of course, ego. So lesson number five is it's not about me. And in fact, it doesn't even matter if no one ever, ever recognizes me, right? No one ever recognizes what I give or the effort I put into it or anything like that. It's just not about me at all. Lesson number six, I'm a gateway. All of the thoughts that come into my mind come in through consciousness as a whole, and I am a gateway. I get to choose which of those thoughts I will let in my gate and which of those thoughts I will refuse and turn away. Refuse and turn away really means not give interest to, not give attention to. Anything that I let in my gateway, I give right back to the entire universe of consciousness. So if an anger thought comes into my mind, I give my interest and belief to it, I let it through my gateway, and I throw all that anger energy back out into the universe. Environmental pollution is what Michael Singer calls it. But since I am a gateway, if an anger thought or a judgment thought comes into my mind, I can just refuse it. I can refuse to let it in, which means refuse to have interest in it, refuse to have belief in it. And anything I do not let in dissolves in that moment. I just read a story, a book over the weekend. I don't read many novels, but the reason I read this book is because Jasmine's best friend wrote it. She's only 21 years old, and I think she probably wrote this one when she was 19, because she's on her third book now. It was just published, though. And she's also an engineering major, and she's Jasmine's best friend, so this is why I read the book. And in the book, there's these creatures that humans are at war with, and the creatures are called wraiths, W-R-A-I-T-H-S. And the only way to kill a wraith is to chop their head off. But the reason I'm bringing that up is what happens when you kill a wraith is they just disintegrate. They just, all that's left is a little pile of dust. And that's really what basically happens to these thoughts. If I choose not to let them in my gateway, if I choose not to give them interest, not to give them belief, they disintegrate. They are no more. That amount of anger is not being fed back into the world, or that amount of hatred, or that amount of jealousy, or that amount of the I am bad thought is not being fed back into the world. So it's really important that we take our role as a gateway seriously, because we're serving everyone in the process of guarding our gateway. Number seven, choose against selfishness. The ego is inherently selfish. It can't help it. Even the kindest, most generous person in the world, and by that I mean the most kind, most generous false self, is still selfish. The ego is inherently selfish. It can't help it. And when I taught this, I used the example of picking the best chair in the room, you know, walking in and saying, oh, I like this seat, and putting our books there so we save the seat for ourselves. But there's just a large number of ways that the ego is selfish. And you're actually choosing against the ego. You're helping the ego to die every time you choose against selfishness. Every time you notice a selfish idea, like I'm going to take that best seat, and then because you do not want to listen to ego, you say, no, I'm not. I'm going to take this seat over here instead. You know, if the sole purpose is I do not want to listen to ego, every time you choose against selfishness, you take a little bite out of ego. So that was lesson number seven. Lesson number eight was called How to Manage. And actually, there were several things that were covered in that particular lesson. Let me just glance at number eight real quick, and that may help me to remember a few of them. But it wasn't just one thing. For example, governing with an attitude of giving. Remember, we talked about that. Being simplistic in your lifestyle, and in everything about your lifestyle, not complicating your life so that you busy it up and you no longer have time for meditation and stuff, keeping it very simplistic so you have time for your own spiritual growth, kindness, moving with intuition, with great timing, doing tasks, not when your mind says the task has to be done, but when intuition prompts you to do the task. There were just several little tips like that that were in number 8, how to manage. And then number 9, Big Rocks First, was about putting your spiritual development first. You know, the mistake that a lot of people will make, life is very, very busy, and they'll make this mistake, for example, of getting up and going to email first, and then they never come out of email. They never come out of the tasks that were assigned. So the Big Rocks is about getting up and going to the meditation first, going to the contemplation first, doing those things that are most important first, and then going to the other things. So that's kind of our review of where we've been. And I'm going to stop sharing now. And where we're going to go today is into chapter 10. And I will start by reading chapter 10 in the Derek Lynn version. In holding the soul and embracing oneness, can one be steadfast without strain? In concentrating the energy and reaching relaxation, can one be like an infant? In cleaning away the worldly view, can one be without imperfections? In loving the people and ruling the nation, can one be without manipulation? In the heavenly gates opening and closing, can one hold the feminine principle? In understanding clearly all directions, can one be without intellectuality? Bearing it, rearing it. Bearing without possession, achieving without arrogance, raising without domination. This is called the mystic virtue. So just in a nutshell, this particular chapter is about not losing focus, no matter where you are or what's going on. And we'll go over each line more carefully, and we'll look at the other translations as well. But if we want to just take the lesson, you know, simply, it's about not losing focus. Recently, when I was contemplating the 7 steps to awakening, often when I'm contemplating the 7 steps to awakening, little images come. Sometimes my written contemplation is really describing the image. And on this particular day, there was an image of a cruise ship sinking. And there was a woman who had a choice. She was a very rich woman. And she had some very expensive jewels. I'm sure this kind of came from the movie, The Titanic. She had some very expensive jewels in a safe. And she could either try to go and get her jewels out of the safe and save her jewels, or she could go immediately to the life raft. And in this particular vision, this boat wasn't crowded with people. It was really just her and the sinking boat and the life raft. There was nobody else around. And of course, what she chose to do, because I was contemplating the 7 steps, was she chose to let the jewels go down with the ship to not lose her focus. And her focus was, in this little image, wanting to be rescued. And if she was to go after the jewels, she would be losing her focus, her idea of wanting to be rescued, by thinking she wanted something else more, the jewels. So she was able to maintain her focus that being rescued is what was most important. She was able to let the jewel sink, and she was able to go in the life raft. And then in the life raft, you know, she was there for days and days and days and days. And not for a single moment did she forget that she wanted to be rescued, right? Not for a single moment. She was absolutely certain that she wanted to be rescued. And then a helicopter finally came and they lowered down this gurdy that she needed to crawl into. And she was a little afraid. This is a scary thing, right? The sea is being whipped up. Her little life raft is going like this. And she's got to try and get into that gurdy all by herself and then be lifted up in the air. And very scary. And of course, there was this thought that she was actually be safer not to take that chance. But she didn't forget that what she really wanted was to be rescued. And so because she was never lost her focus, never forgot what she wanted, she was able to crawl into that gurdy and allow herself to be lifted up into the helicopter. And of course, she was rescued. And of course, I'm sure you guys have already figured out that the analogy is not ever forgetting that we want to, I'm going to say, since we're studying the down now, be empty. We could also say awaken. We could also say realize self. But it's about never forgetting that, right? And I thought that was such a perfect little image, this woman never forgetting she wanted to be rescued. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what this chapter seems to be about as we read Derek Lynn's translation. It's just never losing that focus of being empty. Never forget, no matter what the, you know, when you run an organization, and again, this is written for leaders of not only organizations, but kingdoms. When you run an organization, stuff happens, right? And it's about never losing the focus of what you really want is to be empty. Doesn't mean you don't deal with things, but you don't let the focus get lost in the things, right? Let's go ahead and look at Dr. Wayne Dyer. Chapter 10. By the way, he gives his, he translates the Tao, but then he writes a whole chapter, which I am not reading. But he gives each of the chapters a name. This is the first time I even noticed the name. I haven't even been looking at his commentary. I've only been looking at his translation. But the name is Living Oneness, right? Living Oneness. So even that name to me talks about that focus of being empty. Because you either live individual, which is the fullness, all the ideas, all the thoughts, or you live oneness, which is empty, and you're waiting for the Tao or consciousness to inform you in every moment, right? Because you're one with it. So it's kind of an interesting name that he's given, Living Oneness. But let's read his translation of the 10th verse. Caring body and soul and embracing the one, can you avoid separation? Can you let your body become as supple as a newborn child's? In the opening and shutting of heaven's gate, can you play the feminine part? Can you love your people and govern your domain without self-importance? Giving birth and nourishing, having yet not possessing, working yet not taking credit, leading without controlling or dominating. One who heeds this power brings the Tao to this very earth. This is the primal virtue. Brother Wind is having a heyday in La Vida today. Yeah. In fact, today, tomorrow, and Friday are supposed to be the strongest winds of the year. Yeah, so. So we have a very strong house here. We can withstand him, but he's like the big bad wolf out there, huffing and puffing and blowing. And, yeah, good thing we don't live in a straw house. I took a walk in him, and I was listening to Ann and Carla, and the majority of the time I could hear, but every now and then, because I had the earphones in while I was walking, but every now and then, Brother Wind was so loud, I couldn't hear you guys. Brother Wind wanted to dominate, and so he did. Okay, so this is the Tao Te Ching by Stephen Mitchell, chapter 10. Can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you do the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things, giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control? This is the supreme virtue. So today I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to use the Stephen Mitchell version as the primary and see if there's anything to pick up in the others. But I love the way he starts, because we all know how important this is. Can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? And the original oneness, again, we'll call emptiness. I think it's very important when we study the Tao to use that word, emptiness. Because, you know, we can have all kinds of ideas about what oneness is. You know, just sit around with a bunch of spiritual people at a party and listen to all of their ideas about what oneness is, all of which, by the way, are completely incorrect. So it's much better just to realize it's emptiness, right? It's no me. Oneness is no me. There's either me or no me. And when there's me, you have the separation, which is the language that Wayne Dyer used, right? Can you avoid the separation? That's the me. The no me, which is emptiness, is the oneness. Those are the two options, and there is no other option. So when he says, can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep it to the original oneness? He's really about talking about dropping mind wandering, isn't he? You know, where when we were in, those of you who are in gentle healing with me, when we were in gentle healing year two, we went through the teachings of Inner Ramana twice. And in the teachings of Inner Ramana, we were given tools for exactly this purpose, to help coax our mind from mind wandering. One tool was surrender. What am I to do now? And the purpose of that was just to feel an intuitive prompt as to what I'm to do, instead of thinking, oh, let's see, now if I do this, you know, sure, we'll be happy, but oh my goodness, Jacqueline would probably rather I do this. And actually, I've got all these emails. Maybe I should do that, because that's a bunch of people who are going to think I'm not responsible. And, you know, that's all the chatter, 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 the me, right? It's really all about me. So when we ask, what am I to do now, we are avoiding all of that chatter as a way of making decisions. We're just feeling an intuitive prompt and we're trusting it. So it allows us to stay out of that mental chatter. Another tool that we were taught was the mantra, I am that. And the primary purpose of the mantra is to use it to step into silence in place of listening to mind wandering. You know, like for me, the easiest times to listen to mind wandering is when whatever I'm doing doesn't require mental focus. You know, like showering, brushing teeth, I can do those things without paying any attention at all. My body, my brain knows how to do it without me, right? It's completely wired into the brain. I don't even have to be there, and I can brush my teeth and take a shower. And so that's when I can also get very, very lost in thought. Just whatever. I mean, crazy, stupid stories, repeating conversations that happened yesterday, imagining the future. And so the mantra is for use during those times. You don't need to say, what am I to do now? Because you know you're brushing your teeth now. You already know that, right? But you do need another tool to help you step out of that mind wandering. So what you do is you notice that you're mind wandering, and then you go, I am that I am. And you return your attention to presence, and you notice what it feels like to brush your teeth, right? It's just a tool. It's like a bridge to take you out of mind wandering into a more silent presence beingness. And then, of course, we also learned the self-inquiry. You know, let's say I didn't like the wind. I know a lot of people don't. Actually, I don't mind the wind at all. Someone told me a long time ago, if you're going to live in La Vida, it was a guy named David. He was a Buddhist, actually. He said, if you're going to live in La Vida, you have to make peace with the wind. And in that moment, I said, okay. And you'll notice I even call it Brother Wind, right? Like, it's Brother Wind. And it's doing winter and spring. So what are you pointing at?
Deer.
Oh, there's a deer in the driveway. Yeah, they've made peace with Brother Wind also. But let's say I didn't like the wind. Let's say, you know, this is awful. You know, it's 55 degrees today. Do you know what a nice day it would be if it wasn't so dang windy, right? And this is how the mind is doing. Well, then the way I use the self-inquiry is I look at those thoughts and I ask, what sees this? What am I? And I turn the attention to presence. And just like a wraith, that thought just disintegrates, right? So those are some tools. We have the tools. So really all that we need is the interest, right? All we really need is to have more interest in, I'm going to use the word avoiding now, because another word's not coming to mind. So more interest in avoiding mind wandering than we have in paying attention to it, right? That's what we need, more interest in avoiding it than paying attention to it. So the first line, can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? The second line, can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? Now that's interesting. One thing that's interesting about that is both Wayne Dyer and Stephen Mitchell translated it using the idea of body. And so I'll talk about that. But if I remember correctly, Derek Lynn didn't have the body in there. So we might go look at Derek Lynn too. But can you let your body become as supple as a newborn child? Well, I think I know what supple means. I've heard twice look it up. So I'm going to do that. Supple. Ah, I'm glad I looked it up. Sometimes, you know, I had an idea what it meant and it's not wrong, but sometimes definitions bring more clarity. So supple means bending, moving easily and gracefully, flexible. Now I was thinking about the flexible. I was thinking about how you can just pick up a little baby's finger and, you know, they just let you, right? But this moving easily and gracefully, I wasn't thinking about. So when you move easily and gracefully, you're not moving with tension. You're not moving with ideas of what should be. You're not moving with stress, right? You're moving with peace, with emptiness, with confidence, going with the flow, Cheryl is saying. So can you move easily and gracefully, right? But like I said, Derek Lynn didn't use the word body, and I would like to go look at what Derek Lynn said again. He said, in concentrating the energy and reaching relaxation, can one be like an infant? He didn't use the word body. And that really said something to me, because when I'm in meditation, one intention that arises to help me in meditation is to return to my infant awareness. Right? Just that pure infant awareness. You know, as an infant, I didn't think about what was in my email. I didn't think about what I might say in gentle healing tomorrow. I didn't think about whether we were on budget or under budget or over budget for the retreat house. I didn't think about, you know, anything as a baby, as I assume. I don't actually remember. But it seems that there was just pure awareness. Just pure awareness. So one of the intentions that I have when I meditate is to get back to my infant awareness. I know it's still there. It was there first. Everything else has been added on to it. I know it's still there. And so I go back, looking for that pure infant awareness. So when I read this, in concentrating the energy, and reaching relaxation. That also makes me think of meditation, the relaxation, right? So and in meditation, lots of people don't like this word, but I just think it's the fairest word in the world. In meditation, we're concentrating. You know, we're concentrating on our purpose, which is, again, to realize the true self, to realize consciousness without being aware of thought, without being aware of emotions, right? And that takes concentration. So meditation, to me, is concentration, whether people like it or not. But what's interesting is it's not a forced concentration. I think this is why people don't like it. They think of concentration as a forced thing. It's a relaxed concentration. It's kind of like the woman in the life raft not forgetting why you're there, right? That's kind of a relaxed concentration. You remember you want to be saved, right? You remember you want to be rescued. But when you're in meditation, you remember you want to know the empty self. You want to know the empty self without being distracted by thoughts or feelings or anything. So when he said, in concentrating the energy and reaching relaxation, can one be like an infant? The way that read in my mind is, can I return to that infant awareness, that before awareness, that pure awareness, before it was polluted by any learning, by any ideas, by any beliefs? But again, you know, it looks a little different in both Wayne Dyer and Stephen Mitchell because they say, can you let your body become as supple as a newborn child? So can you be as flexible as a tumbleweed in the wind, right? A tumbleweed in the wind doesn't have ideas about where it's going to go. It just goes wherever the wind blows it. Right? So can you physically be that way? Can you just go wherever intuition blows you, wherever the circumstances take you, without having in your mind, this is what's supposed to be and this is where I'm going to go, right? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? That is also a goal of mine in meditation. I wouldn't use those words. But my goal is consciousness focused upon consciousness to the exclusion of all else. Those are really Nisargadatta's words. But the idea is, and in fact, sometimes what I say is only me, but the me in that is consciousness. So if I'm in meditation and my eyes are closed and my attention drifts to some kind of thought stream, when I notice that my attention drifts to the thought stream, what I say to myself in meditation is only me. And that reminds me that I want to focus on consciousness and nothing else, right? Only me. And that's really what I hear in this as well. Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light, right? Only consciousness. No attention on thought, no attention on feelings, no attention on memories, no attention on visions. Someone was telling me the other day how a friend of hers meditates and how this friend is able to travel. And I know people can do this. It can actually be done, travel to other worlds in her meditation and engage with other people and how cool that is. And that may be cool, but that's called playing around in illusion, right? This says, till you see nothing but the light. Right. And I always love that story by Muji, you know, where Muji talks about the yogini who saw these fabulous colors in meditation, heard this incredible music in meditation, saw these light beings in meditation coming at her, these lovely light beings. And what she remembered to do each time was to ask, what sees this? What sees this? And to return her attention to consciousness, only me. So that's what this reminds me of as well. It's meditation instructions, right? And in fact, it follows the previous line. So if Stephen Mitchell and Wayne Dyer hadn't put the word body in here, we would in effect have two meditation instructions in a row. Right, the first meditation, let's look at Derek Lynn again. The first meditation instruction being in concentrating the energy and reaching relaxation, can one be like an infant? Can you reach that pure awareness first where you're just purely aware? And then, basically, in cleaning away the worldly, well, I don't want to go with his, he changes it, so now I'll go back to Stephen Mitchell. And then, can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you go even further? Because the infant is still subject aware of object. It's a pure subject aware of object. So once you reach that, can you go even further where it's no longer subject aware of object, it's subject aware of subject, right? Now let me just read to you what Derek Lynn said, since he did translate that a little differently. Again, Stephen Mitchell said for the second instruction, can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Derek Lynn says, in cleaning away the worldly view, can one be without imperfections? And I think he's saying the same thing, but I think people have ideas about what imperfections is. For example, we listen to the song, I'm just an old chunk of coal, right? I have all these imperfections. I'm going to shine them all away. And I talked about how much effort that would be. Here, when he talks about can one be without imperfections, what I think he's really referring to is, can you back up all the way to pure consciousness? Without anything prior to pure consciousness. Ramana Maharshi calls everything prior to pure consciousness impure, right? Impure. So can you be without those impurities? Can you be without those imperfections? Can you back yourself all the way up to just consciousness aware of consciousness? Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? I mean, that's a pretty simple one, right? Obviously, it's a mistake that most leaders make, trying to turn their employees, their subordinates, into the perfect puppets. And that's not what they're supposed to be. What they're supposed to be are people who know how to follow their own guidance. You know, which means you have to let go as a leader of how you think things are supposed to be. And you have to allow your people to find their own way. Right? You have to teach them how to find their own guidance. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't some guidance that you give people. For example, you know, your organization may need to stay on budget. And there may be a department within your organization that is not on budget. And so it may be your job as the leader to go and talk to that the manager of that organization, say, you know, you guys are off budget. You need to get back on budget. Remember, here's what the budget is. But what you don't do is micromanage and tell that person exactly what things to quit buying, what things to buy, how to do this, how to do that. You kind of leave them to find that out. And if they aren't discovering on their own, then you go back and you help a little more, but you leave them. You always leave a person to figure things out on their own as much as possible. In fact, situational leadership, which is based on the Tao Te Ching, what situational leadership teaches is that the only thing a leader does is fill in the gaps for an employee, right? So if an employee has a gap, something they haven't thought about, something they haven't learned, a resource they don't have that they need, your job is to fill in that gap, give them the proper education, give them the resources they need, train them in something they need to be trained in, give them some ideas they haven't thought of their own. But once you fill the gaps, you step out again. You're not supposed to be right there looking over their shoulder, controlling everything they do. Your employees, your subordinates are not supposed to be ideal puppets, right? So can you love people, right? And it's just like, you know, again, not everybody knows how to be a loving parent, but it's just like a loving parent only gives their child as much assistance as they need to grow up in a healthy way. If you're over controlling of your child, the child doesn't grow up. Right? You have to only give them as much help as they need. I mean, you can't just totally ignore them because they won't grow up. And you can't be telling them every little thing and trying to control them and never letting them make their own decisions. You can't even help your kids out of all the problems they create for themselves because they'll never learn. It's more the middle way, right? You have to give them enough help that they can learn and mature, but you also have to leave them alone. You have to let them learn from their own mistakes. You have to let them make their own decisions so that they can grow up. So it's the same kind of thing with your employees. It's a matter of knowing how much help, how much guidance, and when to get out of the way and let them do the rest on their own. Let them learn to follow their own guidance. So can you love people as if they're your children and lead them without imposing your will, right? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? We are really, I don't know if you guys can hear, like last week we had the stomp, stomp, stomp. This week we really have Brother Wind. I mean, that, even shaking the house sometimes. Yeah, every now and then the wind comes through the window and just away, it kind of sounds like the house just farted.
That's what I was going to say earlier.
So, you know, he definitely attracts our attention today. You can't ignore Brother Wind today. He's bellowing for attention. But can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? That's really interesting. So an example right now, the Awakening Together radio is broken. As far as I know, it's still broken, right? Has anybody fixed it? Okay. The Awakening Together radio is broken, and the truth be told, John, Jacqueline, and I don't know what's wrong. And we also have pretty full plates. One thought that crossed our mind is, let's just get rid of the radio. But as I pointed out to them yesterday in a meeting, it was clearly pointed out to me that was just a selfish perspective, right? Just wanting to unload the problem. That was a selfish perspective. And as we saw a while ago, one of the lessons of the leader is to do the opposite of selfishness every time. So the opposite of selfishness in this case is to bring that radio back up. But we're not magicians. So what we're doing is we have a full intention of getting that radio back up, but we also have to accept the fact that right now it's down. We have to accept that in peace. You know, it's down. This is what it is. We have to accept we don't quite know how to bring it back up, and we also accept that we're gonna find a way. You know, we're gonna find a way. So it's kind of an interesting thing because, again, if you look at this particular line, can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? That doesn't mean radio's broken, that's it, we're never, you know, we're done, woohoo, no more radio, we don't have one less thing to deal with. It means accepting everything as it is, right? That's really what it means, acceptance. That's the key word, acceptance. You know, can you accept the fact that the radio is not broken and that the radio is broken? Can you accept the fact we don't know how to fix it? Can you accept the fact there are lots of other things that also need to be done? Can you accept all of this and then follow intuition in the moment? You see how that works? First, you have to accept everything. Then, then you can feel the peace. And then you get the guidance.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the order.
So simple.
Acceptance, peace, guidance. Right? That's the order. So first you have to accept the whole situation. I see a few people taking notes on that one, so I'll just take a drink of tea here. So can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Most people are so trapped into their personal point of view, they can't see it all. That's just a fact.
I can still really do that.
Yeah, that's just a fact. You know, if we have eight people in a room and there's a decision that needs to be made, we're lucky if one person can see the whole problem. Most people only see their little part of the problem. And therefore, the solution they want addresses their little part of the problem. They're not looking at the whole thing, right? So, can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Can you see the whole problem? Can you see the point of view that she has and that she has and that she has and that he has and that somebody who's not even here has? And can you take all of those point of views in and see them as equal, as all valid, right? Or are you only able to see your point of view? And you can imagine for a leader of an organization how important it is to be able to have that broadness, to let go of your point of view and be able to see everything. And then you can begin to find your way to the answer, to the real answer. You know, sometimes what a manager has to do is to understand that a certain employee is under too much pressure right now. Let's just give them a day, you know, give them a day off. You know, even if it's just a day off from thinking about this, we'll look at it tomorrow. You know, you have to be able to think about so much, and you do that through emptiness, through observing, through seeing. If you're looking, you can see when a particular employee is under too much pressure right now, and it'd be better just to wait a day, right? But if you're thinking, I need this done, you don't even notice that. So can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Giving birth and nourishing, right? Now we're talking about giving birth and nourishing an organization, a kingdom, a retreat house, a project. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing. The first thing that comes into my mind when I read that is having power without possessing. It would be idiocy to say that the leader of anything doesn't have some amount of power. But can you have that power without personally possessing it? I'm the one in charge here, right? Right? Everybody knows that, you know. Everybody knows that you're the one in charge here, right? You're the leader. They know.
That's so funny.
Right?
Yeah, that's how the ego is.
Yeah, but can you have that power without possessing that power? The most important thing for you as the leader is not to possess the power that you have. And what does that mean? Well, it means all kinds of things. It means not trying to control. It means trusting your employees, delegating to them, letting them figure out how to get it done. Seeing everybody as your equal. You know, even though everybody knows you're in charge, still seeing everybody as your equal, as valid teammates that have something to give here. Right? Can you have power without possessing power? Giving birth and nourishing. Having without possessing. Here's a really good one too. Acting with no expectations. Now let's say I tell Cheryl clear as day, right? And I have three witnesses. Clear as day. Cheryl, so-and-so is coming next week. She's highly allergic to milk. Therefore, no milk in anything next week, right? Clear as day. Now, hopefully Cheryl hears that. But to have an expectation that she heard it is an error. Which is why sometimes when things are that important, you may come back and say, oh, what are we having this week? No milk, right? You know, sometimes you have to double check. You have to make sure you're heard. Because to have an expectation about anything is an error. Some things you just let go. Let's say it was Cheryl so-and-so is coming next week. She doesn't like milk. You know, let's not have anything with milk in it. Well, then she forgot. Oh, well, she didn't hear me. She forgot. Oh, well, it's not a big deal. I let that go. I just let it go because it's not important. I don't get mad at Cheryl for not remembering. And if it is important, like she could die, I follow up enough times to make sure that it was heard, sure that there's no milk, sure that it wasn't forgotten in a single dish, right? So this is where I have to know the difference between what's important and I just let go, and what's not important, so I just let go, and what is important, so I follow up closely. But in both cases, I have no expectations, right? In both places, I have no expectations. And if you have no expectations, you will find that you don't get angry. You only get angry when you have expectations of others. You may have to remind somebody of something 5 times, but you don't get angry at the fact that you have to remind them 5 times because you didn't have the expectation that they would remember after hearing it once or twice, right? Are you okay, Don? I notice Dawn's acting like her ear really hurts. Yeah. Let me go ahead and finish this. We're almost done. Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control, right? Leading and not trying to control. Now, we've talked about this several times in the Tao, and I'm sure we will again. But what's jumping out at me this time is the slightly different emphasis is the word trying. You know, are we trying to control in a manipulative way so that nobody notices we're controlling? Right? What's the difference between trying to control and just letting everything be as it is? That's what has to be focused on. Right? So what we're letting go of here is the trying to control. Whether that's in a passive-aggressive way, a manipulative way, a direct way. Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control. This is the supreme virtue. So let me just read the Stephen Mitchell one again. I don't know if we have time to read all of them, but I can read this one again. Can you coax your mind from its wandering and keep to the original oneness? Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child's? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light? Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Giving birth and nourishing, having without possessing, acting with no expectations, leading and not trying to control, this is the supreme virtue. And so this was lesson 10, and I will come up with a title in just a moment, and I'll type it in the room. Bye, everyone.